What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Well, not quite. I'll be talking about more than just the Benjamins. Welcome to FinTech Beat, where finance, technology, and policy come together. I'm your host, Chris Brummer, and the future of finance is now. Federal Reserve is, as we all know, one of the most important financial institutions in the world, but it isn't exactly the first name that comes to mind when one thinks about innovation. But as the global economy has changed, the Fed is changing with it, or at least is prompted to, as a range of developments from cryptocurrencies to digital payments are changing the way banks operate around the world. Now, part of this change has been to bring in a new generation of experts to help inform the process and assist the central bank with its own digital transformation. And one of the key insiders in that process is Sunaina Tuteja, the Fed's new chief innovation officer. Now, Sunaina is not a rookie to the FinTech Beat. In fact, she was one of our very first guests when we started the podcast, and we're especially delighted to have her back on for her first official interview in the role. So if you're interested in the Fed and where it's going, sit back for a conversation with the outsider, who's now very much anything but.
Regulators! Mount up! It was a clear black night, a clear white moon. Warren G was on the streets trying to consume some...
Sunaina, thanks so much for making it onto FinTech Beat.
Thank you, my friend Chris. Yes, joining the Federal Reserve System as the inaugural System Chief Innovation Officer was certainly not on my 2021 bingo card, but here we be.
Well, you know, I have known you. Nonetheless, you know, I think that you're very much up to the task. I mean, you have been always sort of leading these conversations, at first from the private sector with TD Ameritrade, where you were always very much upfront and very much out there talking about new innovations, whether or not it be cryptocurrencies or digital payments. What motivated you from sort of moving over from that role, right, to this new public sector role at the Fed?
Yeah, thank you, by the way, for those kind words, kind intro, and having me back on your pod. As an avid listener, I'm always elated to have this opportunity to, have this chat with you and, hopefully share a few valuable nuggets with your audience. As I said, like, this was definitely not on my bingo card. I've been very grateful to have had a career leading change and innovation at the nexus of finance, technology, and policy. So, I've always worked with policymakers, but thus far, I was always the troublemaker on the opposite side of the table, arguing and debating and trying to push forward some of the things that we, in the industry wanted to, lead in terms of transformation and innovation with these frontier technologies. So, when I first approached about this, first of all, I thought somebody was pulling a prank on me. I was pretty convinced that one of my Bitcoin friends or crypto friends were, trying to, dunk me, but it turned out that it was a legit role. And the more I went down the rabbit hole, Chris, what really inspired me was one, how nicely it aligned it is with my personal mission and what I've somewhat devoted my career thus far, which really is, how do you harness the power of these frontier technologies, but do it in a way that's purposeful and that's really helping us break down barriers that persist in financial services? Because by doing that, we're empowering Main Street consumers to really take charge of their financial freedom. And that is so nicely aligned with the mission of the Fed and what the Fed has existed and continues to do in its mission of serving the U.S. economy and the U.S. consumer. And then the second thing for me really was, I'm at my happiest when my learning curve is very steep. Maybe we're just masochists, I don't know. But this really was an opportunity to not just come in and contribute based on the experiences and expertise I've developed in the private sector, but also an opportunity to just learn and grow and, you know, really kind of push myself out to the edges in some ways. And I have to say, having completed my first 100-day adventure at the Fed, one, I'm just super grateful for this inaugural opportunity. And two, I'm just feeling pretty bullish about the awesome work that's ahead of us and the opportunity to make a meaningful dent.
So, you know, I think that almost anyone listening to this podcast will immediately say, well, this doesn't sound like your typical central banker. You know, when you think about the Fed and when you think about central banking and when you think about central banking and innovation, you know, there's obviously this the outstanding joke as to whether or not, you know, that's an oxymoron or not. Certainly you've seen other agencies in the United States sort of pick up on innovation and think about what role innovation should play for them, whether or not it be the CFTC or the FDIC, and they have some really interesting things going on. But when you think about the Federal Reserve and you think about your first 100 days and you think about what innovation looks like at the Fed, you know, how is it different or similar to what you've seen either with colleagues in other agencies or when you think about your own experience in the private sector?
Yeah, that's an astute observation. And I think it's really a strong signal as we're seeing several policymakers and agencies that you reference really put a focus on these types of assignments, which thus far really were kind of table stakes in the private sector. But I'm happy that these types of roles now in the public sectors aren't novelty anymore. It's almost like it's a need to do. In terms of the compare and contrast, and, you know, kind of I've spent my first 100 days trying to suppress my bias for action because I've been very disciplined in just wanting to listen and learn from a diversity of perspectives across the system. And Chris, as you know, the Federal Reserve, as I like to illustrate to my friends and family, it's like a solar system, right? Anytime you start a new assignment, you feel like a little alien that got dropped on a new planet and you're sensing and adapting to everything that's new. For me, you know, joining the Federal Reserve, much to my own astonishment, it's almost like entering a new solar system because it's not one planet. It's a group of, you know, 12 independent planets that have, you know, their own sense of ethos and gravity and their independence, which is essential. And yet all the regional, you know, the reserve banks and the board come together and engage in this interdependent solar system elegant model to kind of serve the needs of the American economy. So I think taking that macro view and that system view and really ingesting these perspectives was important to me. You know, one of the things with innovation is it's often equated with a technology. Technology often is the catalyst or the accelerator, but that can also give innovation a bad rap because it can be seen as shiny object syndrome, right? Or people sitting in a lab, you know, tinkering with stuff, and then the business leaders are going, wait, what am I getting for this, right? And one of the things that I've always maintained in the private sector and it's kind of proving out that thesis, even in the public sector, is, although it can sound contrarian, is innovation is actually agnostic of technology, right? It always is best rendered and most value added when it starts with an obsession about the customer and finding ways to make that experience, you know, simpler, faster, easier, right? So the anchoring heuristic for innovation that I've always found purposeful and value added, is one, are we solving gnarly problems? And the gnarlier the problem, the more of a dent we can make. And trust me, you know, the Fed has a lot of gnarly problems it needs to solve and can solve it at a scale that's enviable, right? Number two is, are we solving these problems in a way that's shipping value to that end user? Again, maintaining that, you know, view of the voice of the customer and really kind of what are the solutions, the painkillers that we're delivering that matters to the end customer? It's not about what Sunaina needs. It's about who are we serving and are we shipping value to them? And so third, it's something we talk a lot of in the private sector, and I wasn't sure the application of the public sector, but it's a very strong synergy, is how are we helping to future-proof our business and our institution? right? Just because you are relevant and dominant and have been for years and years does not guarantee that relevance for the future. So as a franchise, how do we continue to evolve, to keep up with all the changes, and the velocity of changes that are coming our way? And that anchoring heuristic around innovation, around solving problems, delivering value, and future-proofing your institution is really nicely aligned as we, as we make a dent within the construct of the Federal Reserve System.
You know, there were a lot of really interesting things in that answer, and it reminds me of something that I try to tell my students as well, right? Which is, when you think about these institutions, and certainly with the Federal Reserve, where you have a system and not just one institution, a lot of times people want to have, what's the opinion of, XYZ agency, but instead, there's a misunderstanding or an underappreciation of how diffuse views can be even within one regulatory agency, and that even as they are hierarchical, there can be, even within a regulatory agency, certain flatness, especially in highly technical areas. And when you sort of think about that, this aspect of the Federal Reserve, and then you throw on top of it its various mandates, when you think about traditionally its concern for financial stability and price stability, the operation of monetary policy, right? And then, as you had mentioned, just sort of future proofing its own relevance, both domestically and certainly internationally, that seems to really create a number of interesting challenges and things to think through, things that are going to be on your plate. Now that you've been around, how do you think about the process, right, by which you start to think through innovation, given, again, everything from financial stability to the operation of monetary policy? Like, how do you think about innovation and the process of dealing with innovation, both the external innovation that you're seeing in the market and obviously the innovation at the Fed?
It was definitely a learning experience as I was going through the process. And, I've grown up in capital markets and the financial services industry. So I'm like, yeah, I know what the Fed does. It's a regulator. They set monetary policies. And when you work in capital markets, your entire day, week revolves around the FOMC press conference and minutes. So yeah, but there's so many gradients of the work and that and the complexity of the work that happens within the Federal Reserve System. That it's a fertile ground for ongoing transformation, right? And one of the things that was also eye-opening as I joined the Fed and have spent time listening and learning and formulating our future strategy is decentralized innovation at the Federal Reserve is pervasive. Like, there's no shortage of ideas and initiatives and positive intent. In fact, one of the things I was worried about was people's perception and acceptance of innovation. Meanwhile, what I found was there's a wholesale agreement across the system, right, that innovation is a business imperative. Like, that in itself is a huge obstacle to overcome, even in the private sector, right? You need that wholesale agreement and acknowledgement before you even start to make your bet. So I think that creates this fertile ecosystem. Now, the opportunity and the challenge that we have is, and not to get too Ted Lasso about it, which my friends and family love to mock me about, trying to find the silver lining in every challenge. But the opportunity is, how do you harness this interest and this appetite for innovation into meaningful action that, again, is tangible, right? That it's not this abstract thing. So a couple of the ways that we, are drawing that through line is, one, if you ask people, why do you believe it's important for the Federal Reserve System to be innovating? There's two things you hear consistently, right? One is just the volume, the variety and the velocity of technologies that are coming our way. You just can't ignore it. Like, it's having an impact in every aspect of our life, which then triggers the second component, which is, think of how much the consumer behavior and expectations have changed just in the span of the decade and just over the last 18 months, right? And as consumers, we have like the same level of frictionless experience, whether we're hailing a ride or ordering our groceries or doing our banking or, you know, and I think that it becomes another catalyst as a policymaker, but also, you know, we have a huge component in delivering financial services to the market that we're kind of keeping up with the times and also leapfrogging.
So, I mean, you know, when you think about that, you know, you mentioned certainly decentralization, which has obviously been in the news, if you haven't heard, you know, what kinds of emerging technologies then are really, you know, to be a little bit more precise, you know, what's actually captivating your attention and your time, both in terms of the utility to the Fed and obviously the urgency for the Fed to lean into? I mean, you know, when you think about that spectrum of technology and that innovation, it is vast, and it spans everything from obviously the crypto space to machine learning.
Yeah, and you know, I'll start with what you mentioned. You know, there's no shortage of things worth pursuing, and I think that's why I go back to the anchor of what is the problem, right? What is the problem we're trying to solve? And one of the things, you know, kind of using the first principles approach that we're taking is, number one, what is the problem we're trying to solve, right? Who are we solving this problem for? Why are we uniquely qualified to solve this problem? And why does this problem need to be solved now, right? I think, you know, really going through that equation helps you come out at the end with a very credible problem statement or a use case, right? And for me, you know, you mentioned stable coins and CBDCs, and there's been no shortage of news
They're
on that.
They're in the news. They're in the news from time to time.
Lots of fun discussions on that, and we can touch on it. But the area that, you know, I'm really focused on is this confluence of AI and machine learning and robotics, right? Because the other thing we're seeing today with the technology S-curve, that it's not just the impact of one technology. These S-curves are bleeding into each other. So where you really harness the value is where you figure out how are we really combining the forces of what AI, machine learning, and robotics and blockchain together can deliver and tying it back to those problem statements, you know, that you want to address. So, you know, and also from an external partnership perspective, I look at some of the amazing work that's happening in the fintech community, but also in the academia community around AI and machine learning, not just the application of it, but also what does it mean from a policy component, customer protection component. So I think looking at it from that holistic lens is just, you know, super important.
So as you had mentioned, you know, there are lots of things in the news. I mean, machine learning is definitely one of them, from, you know, everything from regulatory compliance to credit scoring and the like. You know, you certainly see the banking regulators leaning into and trying to figure it out. Crypto has been really almost monopolizing the fintech news over the last 2 weeks, in a different context, obviously, you know, with taxation and the infrastructure bill. But, you know, when you think about the Federal Reserve and the question of CBDCs and stable coins, you know, maybe you can tell us a little bit about sort of what your role is, you know, in sort of thinking through those issues and maybe just sort of where you see the posture of the Federal Reserve being as pertaining to these two very high profile issues.
Yeah, I think with AI and machine learning, just to touch on it very quickly, I think part of the utility and urgency around these technologies also is how are we applying it even in the scope of the work that happens within the system? So we're leveling up, you know, our efficiency, but also the types of products and experiences that the Federal Reserve System builds, you know, are up to par and relevant and utilizing these technologies, right, to really up the experience. Listen, you've known me over my career to be an active participant in the crypto space, and my perspectives have actually been very consistent on this topic, right? Even coming into the public sector, you know, I've always maintained this technology and having worked with this technology and this asset class over the last few years as an operator and an investor with actually a deep sense of pragmatism. You know, the way I've always looked at it is, which I think applies even in my current role, is, you know, if you think about it in a product manager sense, money is that ultimate consumer-facing product. We all have a relationship with money. And in many ways, you could argue that the US dollar has the most enviable product market fit, right? If you use that language. And as with any product experience, we have seen and we continue to witness the evolution of money, both in its form and function. That's not just something that started today. That's been happening over decades, right? We could argue that it's been accelerated. And now with the rise of stable coins and DLT and DeFi, really kind of occupying everybody's mindset around this. And I think the reason it's relevant from my perspective, really from an innovation perspective, is, again, you think of how it's a confluence of a very nascent yet powerful technology like DLT, right? It's about the transforming consumer behaviors and expectations, right? And it's also an acknowledgement that there are gaps within the existing financial systems that maybe we can now, correct and modernize and transform because of the availability of these new technologies, but also the consumer is ready and they're asking for it, which has been yielding this range of on-ramps and instruments that we've seen just even over the last few years, right? And I think as the Federal Reserve of the United States, it's incumbent on us to be exploring the potential of these technologies, understanding how we can help fill the gaps that may exist in the current financial system. And again, but most importantly, go back to, and listen to the voice of the customer and then really deciding and understanding what is the role and the approach for designing these meaningful solutions that ultimately serves the needs of the U.S. customer, the U.S. consumer, the U.S. economy, but also the USD's role and its network effects globally, right? So I think the discussion paper and the discussion document is aimed to generate these important conversations around, the benefits, the risks, the use cases, the design principles, and soliciting that public opinion is going to be a key step in that process.
So basically, even when you think about a CBDC, I mean, this is not even the stablecoin conversation. Basically, your sense is still that the jury is still sort of out, but that people are that the Federal Reserve is still very much in its information gathering phase of sort of thinking it through.
Yeah, I think that's a fair wrapper. We're listening, we're learning, we're exploring. Given all the the points that I referenced to, and I think the conversations that we hope to generate with the discussion document and just listening to the diversity of constituents will definitely be an important step.
So, I before we end, I want to sort of maybe touch on where we began, because I think it's really, really interesting that the Federal Reserve, which would frankly choose someone like you to sort of, to be there, to be at the cusp of their innovation conversation. But these kinds of conversations rely on lots of different people, and many of our agencies, and something that I hear constantly, almost every day from regulatory agencies, is sort of, this human capital, sort of the talent question and the talent gap of how do you make sure that you have people who are familiar with these technologies, available to provide input and to make sure that the best, most thoughtful decisions are being made. How do you think about that question? Now that you're in, the value proposition of talent moving between public and private sectors. What do you see as the ability of government to attract people, frankly, from the whether or not it be the crypto space or the machine learning space or open banking space, the technologists, and have you learned anything as part of your transition, or would you recommend any of these kinds of opportunities that pop up from time to time, and are there things that can make them more attractive, either to the government as a buyer or consumer of talent, or to the folks out there who could be supplying some of that talent?
Yeah, I was always curious when I used to see news of folks in our orbit either going from the private sector to the public sector or public sector to the private sector. And you're right, I'm not exactly at a central casting for a role at a central bank. And, you know, I approach it with a great deal of gratitude and humility coming into it. You know, for me, I think the catalyst that really started to shift my mental model about this was the alignment around the mission, right? One of the things that the more I learned about the Federal Reserve, and I think this applies to many important roles within the public sector, is, you know, how mission-oriented these institutions are. And again, if you are at a point in your career where you have built up core competencies and experiences, expertise that can be translated, right? And you want to help make a dent at a scale that you probably won't get anywhere else, I think kind of a rotation in the public sector, I think, I often think of, you know, could we have a model like the Peace Corps for Fed Corps, or just, you know, in the policy world? And it's not just one way. I think those on-ramps ought to go both ways. And how do we create more of that cross-pollination, you know, so the industry is benefiting equally as the public sector is benefiting from these talents? Ultimately, you know, we're all on this mission to make sure that the United States of America continues to remain one of the most innovative ecosystems. And I think we all have a role to play. And I think that cross-pollination and having those, you know, on-ramps that help people kind of go and get experience in the private sector and the public sector just makes that so much more fertile and so much more conducive. So while I entered into this with a good deal of humility and trepidation, I would definitely encourage a lot of my friends in the private sector to think about these types of rotations and assignments, and equally our friends in the public sector, you know, to do a rotation in the private sector, because I do think it helps you expand your sphere of competencies and experiences. And I think you're able to make a bigger dent.
So Nina, thanks so much for joining the show again.
Thank you so much, Chris. I appreciate it.
On this show, we always like hearing from fresh and interesting voices alongside the more established ones to give you, our listeners, a bit of perspective when you read the latest going-ons in Washington. And what I liked about Sunina is that you hear with her a voice and perspective that you don't necessarily associate with the Federal Reserve and, for that matter, the government. And I think that that's not necessarily a bad thing. And that's not because she'll necessarily be right or wrong about any of the decisions or nudging she'll no doubt be doing in the next couple of years. But because to get to any right answer, even in financial regulation, you need some different perspectives to make sure your analysis and thinking are as rigorous as they should be. And my hunch is Sunina will provide a push in just that direction as fintech ultimately meets the Fed.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we'd love to get your feedback. If you'd like to get in touch, just hit me up at Chris Brummer, DR. That's at CHRISBRUMMER, DR. We'd love to hear from you.